And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Pam W. from San Diego.
Yay! Hi, everybody. I'm Pam, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Pam.
And I want to thank Terry for asking me to do this, and Kathy for reminding me, and... You know, I sat here and I was looking at this whole setup. I'm like, why do you got that step up there? And it's so you can see everybody all the way in the back. Or maybe so that they can see you. That's what I'm thinking it's all about. Anyway, Bradley did a great job. And Bradley goes to my he goes to my Wednesday night meeting. I call it mine, but you know it's our meeting. And he's on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love that. And this group seems like a great group, and there's a lot of people. Larry's here. He's my friend. I've known Larry for years, and a couple of people I thought were friends, they left. And then, but Julie's still here, and Michelle and Peggy and Kathy and Loisine's here. She just moved here from Evansville, by God, Indiana, and I call it that because that's where I'm from. I'm originally from Evansville, by God, Indiana, and I call it by God because everything back there is by God, you know. And my grandpa was a Baptist preacher, and believe me, everything in our household was by God. And you know, I'll just say this: I was a little off out the chute, man. I did not like some people come here and they were, you know, they were normal, well-adjusted kids. And blah, 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 blah. And I never, not once, was I a normal, well-adjusted child. And it doesn't have as much to do, I don't think, with my family as it has to do with me. You know, I just, you know, from a young age, I was really insecure and needed a lot of attention and a lot of approval from my friends and from my fellows. And I don't know if you guys remember being kids, but those kids that were that insecure and needed that much attention were the ones that were the most annoying. And, you know, that's really the part that I played when I was young. And I needed a drink when I was 4, and I didn't take one until I was 11, so I held off, you know. But what happened for me, hi, Steve, what happened for me was, that when I took that drink, I didn't understand it, but I was able to be spontaneous in the moment and not be in my head for the first time in my life. And I got a sense of relief. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says we drink basically for the effect produced by alcohol. And the effect produced by alcohol for me is that I was able to take a deep sigh and got a sense of relief. And I didn't start, you know, drinking every day or anything like that, but I was blacking out by the time I was 15, and I joined the Navy when I was 17, and my first duty station was New Orleans, Louisiana. And I got there on New Year's Eve, 1983. I hooked up with some of my good friends in the barracks, and I headed to the quarter that night, and they were talking about drinking hurricanes and eating oysters on the half shell, and you know, I'm from Evansville, Indiana, so, I mean, like, our idea of seafood is catfish, you know, and I definitely wasn't going to be eating any raw oysters on the half shell for sure, you know, and I did, of course, you know, I did everything I said I wouldn't do, and I did that a lot when I drank, you know, and it took me 3 months to realize that I could do whatever I wanted and my mom wouldn't find out about it. And once I found that out, you know, I became a bar drinker. I like to go to the bars. I like to get dressed up. I like the whole thing, the whole aura, the whole whatever you want to. It was my alcoholic life. Me and my best drinking buddy, you know, we would hook up and we would start drinking while we were getting ready at night, you know, and we'd have whatever we were having, and we'd talk about who we hoped was going to be there, who we hoped wasn't going to be there, who we might run into that night, and who knew we might meet that night, and, you know, swapping clothes and figuring out, planning our night, you know, and I was in the Navy, like I said, so we would always start out at the club on base, And you have your freebies at home, your cheapies at the base. And then, you know, I don't know about her, but I was always looking to see if there were any Marines that wanted to hook up with us and take them along with us, because Marines were a lot of fun. And and then we would hit these three ladies' nights in New Orleans. And we always ended up at the same place. We ended up at Scratch's Pub. And at Scratch's Pub on ladies' night, you got three free drinks, a red carnation, and a male strip show. And I'm not talking about Chippendales. I'm talking about drunk guys from the bar who want to get up on the stage and take their clothes off. And my mom would not have approved, okay? And anyway, so, you know, I'll just say it like this. You know, I was a blackout drinker, and if you're a female and you're a blackout drinker and you're a bar drinker, you're popular. And I was popular. And I found that to be a problem at the point when I woke up with this guy I didn't like. And, you know, I thought, I really got to do something about this. This is really getting out of hand. So I got married. And I married the first Marine that came along. He had just graduated from the Naval Alcohol Rehabilitation Program in Pensacola, Florida. And he was looking for a higher power, and I was looking for something to control and enjoy. So we went down, you know, the happy road of wedded bliss or whatever. And, you know, I have to just say it like this, you know, getting married is not a solution to popularity if you continue to drink. And I was really surprised by that, because I didn't think I would ever do any of those kinds of things, you know. So anyway, it ended up, that didn't work out. But here's the thing is, I would go to he was sentenced to AA, and I would go to AA with him, you know, and I loved Alcoholics Anonymous. I just loved it. I thought this was great. And I have to admit, you know, it's a lot easier to love AA when you're not the alcoholic, you know what I'm saying? Because he didn't love it quite so much as I did. But anyway, I loved AA, and he would go to meetings, and he would come home, and he'd have a couple of drinks. So, you know, I wanted to help him out, right? So I told him, I said, I don't think you're supposed to drink after you go to them there AA meetings, you know? And he told me something that I think is really true for a lot of us. He's like, Pam, it's not that I don't want to drink. I just don't want to get in trouble for my drinking, you know? So he was using AA meetings so he could control and enjoy his drinking. And that didn't work out for very long at all, and we didn't work out. And what ended up happening for me is I was in the Navy, I ended up getting stationed here in San Diego, California. This was my last duty station. And the last time I got drunk, I was at the Hank Williams Jr. concert at the El Cajon Speedway. And I had started out as a Cyndi Lauper girl that just wanted to have fun, you know, and I ended up at the Hank Williams Jr. concert. So there was a psychic change that occurred along that path, too. you know, I was engaged to another fella, and I would not drink for long periods of time because of the popularity thing, and I never knew what was going to happen when I started drinking. So I would go for long periods of time and not drink, and then, you know, the next special occasion that would come along, that would be my time to drink, you know. And so the Hank Williams Jr. concert was the special occasion. And so I skipped breakfast, and I drank a bottle of wine, and, you know, drank a six-pack on the way. And you know, I'm just going to tell you real clear about what I remember of this last drink, because it speaks volumes about the person that I was, you know. We stopped along the way to go to the bathroom, because I always had to do that once I started drinking. And you know, there was a stretch limo out front of the 8 a.m. p.m., and so I came out of the bathroom, and I told my boyfriend, or my fiancé, I told him, I said, you know what? Patty Loveless was in the bathroom, you know? And I so didn't even get how insane that idea was, that Patty Loveless. You guys know who Patty Loveless is?
No.
Okay. You know, I had no idea how insane I sounded saying that she was in the AMPM bathroom, you know. But I insisted, and then we ended up over at the Hank Williams Jr. concert, and I was pissed off from the beginning because, well, for one thing, I wanted to flirt with the guards and get backstage, and they don't usually want to take girls backstage who have fiancés with them. So I was mad at him just because he was there. And then, you know, I had paid a lot of money for these tickets, and they were crappy tickets. And I was not happy about that. And, you know, I like to give men the opportunity to express how much they love me. And I created one of those opportunities that night. And this big fella was real pissed off at me. And it was up to my boyfriend to get us out of it. And you know what? It was a no-win situation for him. Because if he did it, then he was ruining my fun. And if he didn't do it, then we were both going to end up hurt. So it didn't matter how it worked out for him. He was not going to win in that situation. But luckily for me, he got us out of it, and nobody got hurt. And, you know, the rest of the night, I don't remember. He told me parts of it the next day. And, you know, it wasn't anywhere near to my worst night drinking. Not even close. But what had what happened is I started going to another 12-step program, and when I was in this other 12-step program, you know, they would what I was supposed to do was when everyone else was eating, I was supposed to have one glass of wine, and the experiment didn't go well. And I was talking to my sponsor in that program, and I told her I had two glasses of wine instead of one. And then by the end of the conversation with her, I had admitted that I had gotten a bottle of wine into those two glasses, you know. And she was like, "Are you an alcoholic?" And it was really pretty easy for me to say, "Yes, I'm an alcoholic." I didn't talk a lot about this, but my dad was a drinker, and my mom was always calling my dad a drinker or calling my dad an alcoholic. And I don't know, you know, I was just like, "Yeah, I think I am an alcoholic." So she told me to start going to AA meetings. But I was an alcoholic and my real problem was this ANDA thing over here. I had some bad things happen to me when I was drinking, and I had some blackouts, but I wasn't nearly as bad as the rest of you guys, you know? And that's what I thought in my head. And, you know, I was like one of these pink cloud newcomers. I loved AA, and everything was going wonderful. I imagine there were people who would like to throw knives at me, you know what I mean? Because I was so happy. And I just thought, you know, well, you know, I'm more spiritual than they are. I'm walking hand in hand, you know. I got it going on. And that wasn't it. So what ended up happening for me is I also had lists of old ideas when I got here of things that I thought that would make, if I had these things on the list, then I would be okay. And like, first thing on the list was lose weight. If I lost 30 pounds, then I'd be okay. Well, I lost 30 pounds and I wasn't okay. Next thing on the list, get a new car. Got a new car, wasn't okay. Get rid of that boyfriend because he's not right for me, and then I'll be okay. Got rid of him, I was not okay. I got out of the Navy, I wasn't okay. And, you know, the list goes on, and, like, I don't know about you guys, but I always had this one thing that I thought, if this one thing happens, then I'll be okay. That'll really prove that I'm okay. Well, my one thing was to be a famous movie star. And so I set out to become a famous movie star. And you know, I started taking some classes, and I did some theater and all this kind of stuff. And that didn't go well because I was broke all the time, and I don't do well being broke. It's really not my forte. And so another fella came along. I turned my will and my life over to him and married my last good idea, and he got fired from his job 6 weeks later. And I thought, you know what, God, that's really not funny. You know, and I ended up... It took 3 years for all of this to transpire. So at over 3 years of sobriety, yeah, and it's so funny. If you got like less than 5 years, like my thinking at the time when I got married to him was, well, I've done the steps, I've done everything. Now the only thing left to do is let's get married. You know what I mean? And now I look back on that, I'm like, oh my God, you know, it would have been a better idea to wait. Just so you know. Anyway. Anyway, after about 6 weeks of us being married and him getting fired from his job and everything, like, I was a basket case. And he was a drug and alcohol counselor, right? And I baffled him. He was like, I don't understand you, Pam, you know. And he hated me going to meetings all the time, but he was like, I think you need to go to a meeting, you know. And he sent me to a meeting. And I fell apart at the meeting. And it was the Monday night women's meeting up in Mira Mesa. And I just started crying. And I didn't get it. I didn't understand. Why do I feel this way? You know, and this lady came up to me after the meeting, and she told me, she said, I think you're suffering from untreated alcoholism. Well, I didn't really get that because I had a sponsor. I had worked the steps a couple of times. I was one of those chronic step workers, you know. I changed sponsors all the time, too. So every time I changed sponsors, I'd start working the steps again. But I didn't quit at step four. You know, I would work them, but I would just... You know, I don't know. I kept making myself different. Part of the problem was like what I said. I was an alcoholic and the real problem was this Anna thing. So when I hooked up with this lady, she said, Pam, we're going to make your focus alcohol, nothing but Alcoholics Anonymous for 1 year. And you just focus on doing your steps in AA, and you focus on your alcoholism, and you take care of your spiritual malady, and let's see what happens with your physical and your mental and your emotional life. And she asked me, I asked her to be my sponsor, and she said, will you do whatever I ask as long as it's not illegal, immoral, or indecent? And I said yes, and I had no idea what I was getting myself into. But what she ended up doing is she changed my priorities. And Alcoholics Anonymous became my number one priority in life. It came before work. It came before my marriage. It came before everything. And, you know, it was important for me to do that at the time. And so I, you know, I started working the steps. I went to 7 meetings a week and had 4 commitments a week. And once a month we went to a convention somewhere. And you know what happens when you put 4 or 5 women who have alcoholism in a little bitty car and you drive away for the weekend, alcoholism erupts in the car all over the place. And so that's what we would do, and that's what I did. And you know what? It was one of the most painful, difficult, enjoyable times of my entire life. You know, I have friends from that time who are still friends today that if I pick up the phone and call them, you know, it's like we never missed a beat. And I didn't say my sobriety date, but it's November 8th, 1992. So I started working these steps with that lady, and I made Alcoholics Anonymous my number one priority. And I, you know, you guys, I had a memory like an elephant. I remembered every single thing that you had ever done to me. And it was a long 4 step, I want you to know. And I had 110 pages, front and back, 10 resentments on each side. 40-page fear list, and we won't talk about the sexual one and financial, you know. And we went away for the weekend to do my 5th step. And, you know, when I was writing my 4th step, I told her, I said, you know what, it would be so much easier for me to do this if the list contained people that I didn't have a resentment against, you know? Because I found out that I was pretty sensitive and petty, and I had resentments against most of the people I had come in contact with at that time of my life. I took every single thing that people said and did in their lives personal and made it something about myself. And that's a hard way to live, you know? It's not easy living that way. And so then when I was doing my 5th step with her, I remember I was like, this better work. I was like, this better work. I better not be humiliating myself like this for nothing, you know, because I really did see how petty I was and I have been. And, you know, it was great for her to be my sponsor. And I would, like, I remember one time, a couple of times I lied to her, and then I would, you know, feel bad for lying to her, so I'd go back and tell her the truth, and she was like, Pam, why, you can't lie to me like this, you know, you got to tell the truth. And I told her, I said, well, Well, I'm afraid if I tell you the truth that I didn't do something that you told me to do or something like that, that you're going to fire me. She's like, all right, listen, I will fire you if you don't tell me the truth. All right, you just really need to be honest with me. So that was cool. That was very uncomfortable for me, though, telling the truth. You know, I mean, that's not really my strong point. And so then the other thing, like I remember one time with her, I had done the wrong thing, and then I did the right thing, and then as soon as I was doing the right thing, I called her up to tell her how I'd been doing the wrong thing, but then I had done the right thing, and she's like, you know what, Pam? You don't get a cookie for doing the right thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're supposed to do the right thing, you know? And many of my sponsees rue the day that that woman ever said that to me, you know, because I use it. And anyway, what ended up happening for me is, and I remember this too, I was right in my four step, and there was this woman on there, or this girl from childhood, that I was like, you know what, I'm not going to make amends to her. And my sponsor was like, Pam, you're on your fourth step. Just write your fourth step. And I was insistent. I was like, I know I'm on my fourth step, but I'm just telling you. I'm not making amends to her, you know. It's not going to happen. I'm just saying, you know. And she was like, just write your fourth step and just be quiet, you know. And she was right, you know. She did at times when I wasn't totally annoying the crap out of her. She did at times say, you know what, Pam? Just do your fourth step, and when it comes time, do 5, 6, 7, and 8, and when you get to your ninth step, you'll be willing and ready to do whatever it takes. And she was right, you know what I mean? I did 4, I did 5, I did 6 and 7 and 8, and, you know, when it came time to 9, I really wanted to make amends to this woman, and it was actually around, she was a girl I'd gone to grade school and high school with, and what had happened is I hated her. I mean, I absolutely hated her, and I went to grade school with her, and everybody liked her, and, you know, she was the homecoming queen and the head of the basketball team, and, you know, I just hated her. And then she moved into my neighborhood, and it was, again, one of those times when I thought, you know what, God, that's really not funny, you know. It's bad enough I got to put up with her at school, but now she's in my neighborhood. I think that's really too much, you know. And I hung out, I lived out in a very rural part of Evansville, and a lot of my friends went to the Catholic school, so they had never met her. So all the guys fell in love with her, so I couldn't have this happen, right? They were my friends. They can't have any other friends, or I get to choose their friends if they're my friends, right? So I started repeating things I'd heard, and making stuff up as I went along. And what the guys did is they narked on me. They told her what I was saying. So I got challenged to a fight. And I could not show, you know, if you're challenged to a fight, you gotta show. Especially if you're 14, right? And so I showed, and it went badly, and I was embarrassed, and, you know, it's my 15-year high school reunion, and I'm still thinking about this crap, you know, and so I called her. She was going to be at the reunion, and I had a plan. I got a ticket. I went to Indiana. I went to the reunion. The only real reason I went to the reunion was to see her and to do this amends, and then she wasn't there. And I was bummed, but, you know, I was resilient. So I picked up the phone the next day, and I called her at her house and asked her if I could come over and told her I wanted to talk to her. And she said yes. And I really think that actually the last time I actually saw her was the day that her and I had gotten in that fight. And she was like, yeah, you can come over. When? When do you want to come over? I said, how about tonight? And she let me come over, and you know, I got to tell her, you know, I'm really sorry. I've always felt bad about that. And, you know, I was really jealous of you, and I was really insecure, and I really just didn't know what to do about that. And, you know, I'm sorry. And I can tell you this, she had not been thinking about it for the last 19 years, you know. Only I had. And You know, I met her husband, I met her kids, you know, I hung out for a little while, and, you know, I was really, you know, I walked out of there feeling pretty good about myself. And just so you guys know, I mean, like, there's a reason that we still have 6 and 7 is because I still have alcoholism and I'm still me no matter how good I do on whatever given occasion, you know what I mean? So I still had alcoholism when I left that place that night, and I remember thinking, well, I look better than you do now, you know? And sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, that's all I can say, despite all my spiritual actions that I take. Anyway, you know, the ninth step has been the thing that has really made a lot of differences in my life, and I'll just talk about a few of them. You know, another thing it talks about in the book, it talks about we will intuitively know things, and it talks about in the 11th step, it talks about that we will get this intuition. And I remember I'm trying to remember how to start this. Well, what happened is it was Mother's Day. And I always sent my mom flowers or did something for her. And I wasn't going to send my mom flowers this one year because I was on a budget. And I was going to stick to my budget. I wasn't going to use my credit cards. And me and my sponsor had worked this whole thing out and la, 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 la. But I couldn't shake it, man. It was like I really needed to send my mom flowers that year. And so, you know, I worked it out with my sponsor, and I ended up sending my mom flowers. And my belly button birthday is in May, and I had had a party on, not for me, but for someone else on my actual birthday that year. And my mom had tried to get a hold of me all day long. And she finally got a hold of me about 9 o'clock that night. And, which is 11 o'clock Indiana time, and, you know, mom gets up really early to go to work, so she was really committed to talking to me, you know. And she called and she said, well, Pam, I just want to make sure I got to say happy birthday to you on your birthday. And I was like, well, thanks, Mom. You know, I was like, oh, that's no big deal. I'll talk to you. You know what I mean? I thought it was no big deal. And then what happened is just a few days later, I got a call saying my mom had had a heart attack, and she was in the intensive care. And I didn't go home right away because I thought mom was going to be all right. And, I didn't have any money anyway until payday. And those situations scare the crap out of me anyway. I hate being in those situations. It's hard on everybody. And, you know, I'm an alcoholic, and hard is not always my strong point. So anyway, I thought about it, and, you know, the thought was, you know, your mom doesn't really need you to be there when she's passed away. She needs you to be there when she's alive so she'll know how much you love and care about her while she's still here. So payday was Friday. I bought my ticket and I went home. And she was in the intensive care, and the doctors were, you know, everything was going really good. She got moved out of intensive care into her own room, and I had spent the night, and I was leaving that morning, and my sister was on the way up to the hospital, and I had gone home to get some real sleep, and the hospital called and wanted me to go back up there, and they took me into a room, and the doctor came in, and he said, we did this, we did this, we did this, we did this, and we just couldn't bring her back. Your mom's gone. And then he kept on going down the list, you know what I mean? And I was like, I was totally unprepared for that. I was totally unprepared for that. I had no inclination that my mom was going to die at all. I thought for sure she was going to be just fine. And I'm so glad I went home. I'm so glad I was there. And then, you know, I took a leave of absence from work, and I stayed back there with my brother and my sister because our dad had died before that. And, you know, so I took about a 30-day leave of absence and helped my family. And, you know, I was the one that had to do the funeral arrangements because I'm the oldest. And I did all that stuff, and I got up at my mom's funeral, and, I said something. I wrote something, and I read that at her funeral. And, you know, I wouldn't have done those things had I not been sober. When my grandma died, I didn't go home because it was too hard. So If I'd have been drinking, I don't even know if I'd have been there at all. So I'm really grateful that I got to be there. And then I didn't talk about this at the beginning, but I was adopted when I was a little bitty baby. And I knew who my biological mother was. My mom and dad had told me when the night before I took my oath to join the Navy. And, you know, I never talked to that woman, first of all, because mom and dad had been alive. And I thought, well, it'll be hurtful on mom and dad. So there's no reason to do that. Don't hurt them. And then they both passed away. And then I was like, well, who cares now? You know, I'm 34 years old. You know, I've never talked to this woman. Who cares if I talk to her now? And what ended up happening is I was doing some night step work with my current sponsor, and I had this thought. Actually, it was the night, Julie, that I dropped you off at Twiggs, and I was driving home. I was driving home, and I had this thought. I was like, "You need to forgive Betty." Betty was my mom, my biological mom's name, and I waited till in the morning, and I called my sponsor. Sponsors, you know what? You know what? My sponsor, She does help me and give me direction and stuff like that, but her real job is to keep me in the book, working the steps, and working on my relationship with God. But, you know, I run stuff past her because I need an objective point of view. So I wanted to run, and this seemed important. It seemed kind of big since I was 38 years old and never, ever spoke to her in my whole life. So I thought, you know, I should probably run this past her before I do anything. And it's so funny because my sponsor, she's one of those ladies who's like, okay, write a letter to God, read 3, 7, and 11, pray, and then let's see what happens. You know, so I called her up and I said, I think I need to contact Betty and make amends or forgive her. And she was like, you're right. Do it now. Hurry up. Pick up the phone. You know, it's like she had been waiting for me to get there. You know what I mean? So I actually... So I got a hold of Betty and I got her on the phone and I said, Betty, it's Pam. And she said, I've been waiting 38 years for this phone call. And the next thing she said to me was, she said, I was a bad mother. I was a bad mother when I gave you up for adoption. And in that moment, I felt all of the guilt and remorse and regret that she had had. She was an alcoholic mother. And she couldn't take care of her kids, and that's the reason that I got adopted. And in that moment, I felt all of that stuff that she had been feeling her whole life. And you know, I let her off the hook. Not that there was actually a real hook that she was actually on, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, she had not done anything to me, and that's what happened in that moment. Is I went from forgiver to forgiver for what? She gave me one of the biggest gifts I'd ever received in my life, which was she gave me to a family who, although they were a little crazy, a little wacky, they loved me unconditionally, and they provided for me the best possible home that they could, and I got a lot of gifts from that. So, you know, and it's so funny too, because like when I was most of my life, I always thought God didn't love me. I thought, you know what, if God really loved me, I would be with my real mother and we would have a real home and a nice home and a decent education and blah. I have this list of stuff that I thought, you know, if God loved me, that's the way it would be. And I just always thought that God didn't love me because the family that I ended up with didn't have all of the outside things, you know. But what they do have and still do have are really great hearts. So in that moment, you know, I went, forgive her for what? She gave me one of the biggest gifts I ever been given in my entire life. And I did try to have a relationship with Betty, but it didn't work out so much, not so much. But I have 8 half brothers and sisters as a result of contacting her, and I have relationships with those people today, and she passed away a couple of years ago, and I actually got up and spoke at her funeral too. I didn't plan on it, I was like moved to do it. I feel like I was moved to do it during the ceremony, and I got to get up and speak on her behalf and say what how honest and selfless I thought that she was in the gift that she had given me. And you know, I was glad to get to do that on her behalf. And you know, I couldn't do that without Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not that deep, man. Last year when, I'm telling you, I'm a runner. The Navy worked well for me. You know, you get 2 years and then you get a go. You get 3 years and then you get a go. I mean, I'm a runner. Things get tough, I'm out of here, I'm gone. I'm going to do some. Another reason, you know, divorced a few times, you know what I'm saying? I'm a runner. It's not. And actually, last year when my sponsor gave me my cake, she told everybody I was one of the most shallow people she knew. the only time I ever have any depth is when it comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, and when it comes to working the steps and my commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous. I have depth when it comes to that. I'm seriously committed to Alcoholics Anonymous. Every single gift I've ever received in my life has been a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I had some good things before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I never knew how to keep them. I never knew what to do with them. And it's only from being a part of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm sober today and that I have, you know, I'm not telling you I'm perfect or even sane, but I have a set of tools that allows me to deal with life without taking a drink today. And that is an important thing for me, because if I take a drink, man, it's going to be all over. That, and, you know, like when I used to drink, I could stop for a while, but there was always a reason to go back. If I didn't have Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I can only imagine where I'd be at this point in my life. A moment. What time am I done? 5 till? Okay. So I'm working, right, and I get this promotion at work. And in my job title, I'm going to have manager at the end, which is not a good thing for people like me. And because I think that means you're going to do what I say. And so this was another 9-step thing, and I had been kind of like thinking, and be careful what you think, and kind of saying to God, how am I going to make amends to all those people I was ever rude to on the phone? Because in my job, I had been incredibly rude to quite a group of people, and I didn't know all their names. I had no idea. I'll tell you, they were rude to me first, if that makes it any better, but I don't think it does. And they weren't all rude to me first, but a lot of them were. And anyway, so I was like, this was kind of on my mind, on my heart, however you want to say it. And so I got this promotion. And the job title I got was to Client Services Manager. So God put service in my job title so I could remember what it was I was supposed to be doing. And when you're Client Services Manager, you know what that means? Is that every angry, pissed off, demanding, irresponsible, victimized customer of your company has your direct line. And you get to deal with them all day long. And so I got my answer. That was my way of making amends to all those people I had been rude to on the phone. And I thought, you know, God, you think you're funny. You think you're really funny, you know? And it's not been an easy job. And you talk about wanting to run, man, there's plenty of times that I just want to quit. But I truly believe it's part because of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm able to not quit stuff these days anyway. To bring it all together, as a result of that promotion, remember I married the guy because I wanted financial security? Well, I don't need that anymore, you know. In AA we all make our list of what we want of the people that we want to date or whatever. And so financial responsibility has always been the number one thing on the list for the guy that I want to date, right? So when I when I'm thinking about those kinds of things. And here's the thing, you know, like I get distracted in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, like I'll start out in the morning with really good intentions, you know what I'm saying? Like I remember this one morning, I was like, okay, God, it's just me and this was a couple of years ago. I was getting up to 40, my biological clock was ticking like a time bomb, and I was looking for him because I had to hurry up and find him so we could get married and have a baby, you know? So I was on a time schedule here. And but it wasn't happening, so I told God, I said, all right, God, it's you and me and love and service and AA for the rest of my life. I'm fine with being single. I'm good. And I, you know, that was my morning meditation. I walked out the door and I went to my first appointment. And I was at my first appointment and it was filled with manly men that wanted to help me. And I got distracted. And and I was looking at all the work that they did. And there was this kitchen in there. And I was like, wow, I want a kitchen like that. And then my next thought was, I need to marry a contractor. That's what I need to do. Didn't even think about what I had said 25 minutes ago to God, right? I'm starting to have a plan again. And I went to my second appointment of the day, another place that was filled with a manly man that wanted to help me. And I was like, you know, I went walking out of there and I was like, you know what, God? You know who I am. You cannot put distractions in my path like that and not expect me to get distracted. It's just not fair, you know? So that's why 6 and 7 is around, you know, so that, you know, I can go back to God and ask God to remove from me all the things that are standing in my way. But, you know, he's got a good sense of humor, in my opinion. Based on my life, I think he's got a good sense of humor. And, you know, I got a good life. I got a good life. I just bought a house. I had a friend, a new friend, generously did work in my house. And, you know, I have a lot of friends in AA who have showed up to help me with the house. And, you know, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, nobody would do anything, you know, for me or with me or anything like that. So, you know, I've really been blessed as a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, here's the thing is I've been broken AA, and that time period when I was talking about that was so painful. You know, I may not have had a lot of financial things, but I have, you know, a group of people who know me for who and what I really am, you know, and I don't have to try to be something I'm not today. And wherever I go, I'm me. And that has been as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous and showing up here and telling the truth and trying to help somebody else stay sober and clean up my side of the street. And believe me, when it's me, I know some of those people, they never have to make amends. I'm one of those people that's always having to make amends because I'm the one that's always doing something, you know what I mean? And I have called my sponsor and said, why am I always the one that has to do this? And she's like, because you're the one that does it. That's why, you know? And you know what? And the thing about it is the thing that I understand is that if I'm honest about who I am, then I have, first of all, I'm going to stay sober. And second of all, you know, God can change me. Because until I tell the truth, nothing's going to happen. That's my experience anyway. Anyway, I'm out of time. Thanks for having me.